Coming up on Weekend America.
The bank can take your house, but they don't have to take your pride.
Don't let them come put your things on the street. Have your estate sale. Give it away. Control what you can control. Go with dignity, because I think you'll live better.
I'm John Moe. In tough times, we look to poetry in order to find peace, but one of America's best poets was far from peaceful.
Hughes had a lover's quarrel with America. He is both in love with America and aware of the shortcomings of American political and social reality.
New poems by Langston Hughes, and an unorthodox love story of coconut cake and phone books.
This will be the third year that I call people on the telephone who I don't know, just to reach out and connect with someone.
Why are you calling?
Weekend America, after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe in St. Paul. So here's the thing. This is the last edition of Weekend America, and I don't really know what verb to apply to that. What should we do about Weekend America this weekend? Mourn? Seems too negative for what was a positive experience. Celebrate? No, that's too positive for an unhappy occasion. Observe? Too passive. Commemorate? That's a show, not a Civil War battle. How about we just present? Present some stories, some voices, some thoughts, some radio. Present. Let's present. What does the weekend mean to you?
Well, the weekend, I think, is great because it's a mini vacation built into our lives.
It means that I hang out with friends and I'm really lazy.
Eating what I want, watching sports.
Going to church Sunday with my mom.
Time to myself, time to get ready for the week, time to do the laundry.
The weekend means it's time to go skateboarding.
The weekend means roller skating to me.
The time at 3:31 when my workday ends until 8 a.m. Monday morning when I have to start teaching.
Okay. Y'all have a pretty good idea of what the weekend is. I think you're going to be fine. Those voices came from Brooklyn, Chicago, Washington, D.C., Portland, Oregon, Lincoln, Nebraska, and Concord, New Hampshire. The stimulus package passed the House this week, onto the Senate next. For some state agencies, you'd think that that might be a Brewster's Millions scenario. Remember that movie? It's been made a bunch of times, most recently with Richard Pryor in 1985. Pryor has all this money that he needs to spend in a hurry because, oh, never mind, it's a long story. Pryor, Brewster, had a hard time spending all that cash. But how will states and government agencies do with that windfall? Malcolm Wolf is the director of the Maryland Energy Administration, and he's in charge of how the money will be spent in his state. Malcolm, thanks for joining us.
More than happy.
How much are you expecting to receive?
Depends what ultimately comes out of Congress. Between the House and the Senate version, it's somewhere between $10 and $50 million.
And how difficult is it for you to find ways to spend all that money?
I don't think it will be difficult at all. We have a whole host of existing programs that we currently fund at small levels that we'd welcome the opportunity to fund at much more robust levels.
Like what?
We have a community energy loan program, which gives out money to local governments, nonprofits, and businesses for low-interest energy efficiency projects. We loan money at 2 or 3%, and they can retrofit City Hall or help the local food bank have a new refrigeration system. We fund that at $1 million a year here in Maryland. We have a huge wait list. Easy to fund that at $10 million if funds were available.
Are these things that have been on the table, shovel ready, as they say, ready to go for years, just waiting the dollars? Or has there been special planning you've had to do very recently?
It's a combination of both. We've got a whole host of shovel-ready projects, particularly for state agencies to reduce their own energy consumption. We can also kind of launch new programs and expand them. One that I'm particularly proud of is our green-collar job creation program. We need to get a whole lot of home inspectors and home energy installers trained and certified. Instead of doing 100 over the last several months like we've planned, we want to explode that so we can actually train more and more Marylanders to A, get jobs, and B, save people money in their homes.
I'm sure there's pressure to do something quickly in this situation. I mean, the stimulus can't get tied up in bureaucracy. It needs to get out there and start making a difference. How do you balance the pressure to do something quickly with the pressure to do something wisely?
There is pressure to get the stimulus out. The fortunate reality is that there's a ton of low-hanging fruit available across the nation. Let me share with you one program we've recently rolled out that we would greatly expand with the federal money. We call it Assisted Home Performance. It's targeted for low-income families that aren't going to be able to make the investment and put in more insulation in their homes. We offer up to $5,000 of state money to retrofit their homes. The typical family that's gone through that program is saving 20% in their energy bills, and some families have saved about 50% on their energy bills. We're not only creating jobs that the people we train are then hired to do these work and put in insulation, but we're reducing those families' energy bills, and we're helping to meet our climate and environmental goals.
Malcolm Wolf is the director of the Maryland Energy Administration. He sits at his desk, pen in hand, checkbook out, ready to go. Malcolm Wolf, thank you so much.
Thank you.
People in Michigan are also anxious about the possibility of economic stimulus. This month, the state recorded double-digit unemployment, 10.6%, the highest since 1985. And foreclosure auctions are up 32% in the state's largest county. There have been calls for a moratorium on foreclosures during these tough winter months. Weekend America's Desiree Cooper lives in Detroit. On a recent weekend, she visited one of her neighbors, and they had a long talk about how the foreclosure crisis was affecting the families in her historic neighborhood.
Foreclosures are ravaging the historic Detroit neighborhood of Palmer Woods. That's where I've lived and raised a family for the past two decades. Palmer Woods was built mostly in the 1920s and 30s by those brand new auto executives and those old line lumber barons. It's home to the biggest residence in the entire city, a 35,000 square foot mansion. It was built by auto suppliers and donated to the Catholic Church back in 1926. And the neighborhood is also home to the only house in the city designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. More recently, Palmer Woods has been the place where Detroit's politicians, doctors, lawyers, and educators all call home. But right now, many of the historic homes are in advanced stages of foreclosure. Untold others are on the brink. As families leave under cover of darkness, the second shoe of the foreclosure crisis is dropping here in Palmer Woods. With home prices sliding hundreds of thousands of dollars, many people are worried that even when the economy rebounds, it's going to take years, even decades, for them to regain their equity. Instead of pouring good money after bad, they're just walking away.
Hi, Dad.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
Welcome.
How are you?
Oh, that's okay.
The cat got out. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
He loves it.
I'm visiting my neighbors, Connie and Romy. They're retirees who are raising their grandchildren. They had been relying on their investment income to get the kids through college, but the bear market has sucked away their savings. For years, our backyard's nearly touched. But now, in order to visit them, I can't just walk around the corner. I've got to drive to the suburbs. You see, Connie and Romy had an estate sale in their Palmer Woods home this summer. They cashed out some of their retirement funds, and just weeks before the market crashed, they bought a smaller suburban home and moved in.
This is a beautiful view.
This is the first time I've seen their new house.
And it's a very comfortable space for us. When we came here, I was busy looking at the house, trying to fit the furniture.
I was looking at the yard. I mean, I love the yard. It's absolutely fabulous and very relaxing, and I think we're going to enjoy it quite a bit.
They're negotiating with the bank about what to do with their house back in Palmer Woods, the one they've left behind.
I don't think most of my friends would ever have guessed that we would have done this, but so be it.
So I understand how you all came to that decision, but you were my neighbors, and here I am, remaining behind in a neighborhood. I don't have the option of cashing out a 401k. I got to stay there. And the property values are going down and the houses are going in foreclosure. Like, what do you have to say to me?
Well, I feel very badly about us leaving the neighborhood because we realize that that has a negative impact potentially on the property values there. It's not been an easy decision, and we've observed neighbors even 5 years ago who made similar decisions.
And I would even go so far as to say is I think it's important that everyone packs their own parachute in the sense that I'm responsible for myself and my family, and you have to, you know, be responsible for yourself and your family.
Well, that's cold comfort to those people who are helplessly watching the value of their homes nosedive. But Connie and Romy didn't want to be sitting ducks. They've already bailed out three family members who lost their homes to foreclosure. And Connie has experienced that kind of financial terror firsthand.
When I was in college, my family lost their home. My father lost his job. They were not able to pay. My family chose to keep me in college and my brother in college. And the other family members contributed money, and we were totally oblivious to what happened until the end of my sophomore year, and I came home from school and found out we were living with my grandmother's sister. And my father had temporarily moved back in with his parents.
What was that like for you?
I wasn't there when the things were put on the street. But in the back of my mind, I know it wreaked havoc in the relationship between my mother and the father because it was a very difficult time. The tragedy that came from that was that it wasn't too much longer after that that my father died. And so that stress and turmoil and loss of the opportunity for the family to be close, I mean, that's all part of that memory. I suppose it contributes to my sense of wanting to leave with dignity. Don't let them come put your things on the street. Have your estate sale, garage sale, give it away. Do whatever. Take your treasures. I say maybe it's part of pack your own parachute. Control what you can control. Go with dignity because I think you'll live better.
Connie proudly shows me through the rest of the house. We stop in the kitchen where Romy does all the cooking.
This, I guess you would call a country kitchen. It's big, it's comfortable, it's fresh, it's clean. What more can I ask for?
And how much time do you spend in the kitchen, Connie?
How much time does it take to pour a glass of orange juice?
Outside, it's starting to snow again, and the cat that I'd let out was peering at us through the kitchen window.
Thank God the cat came back. I was feeling bad about that.
He's a house cat, but when he has a chance, it's like a break. He's
he goes for a
jailbreak. He's out of here right now.
Connie and Romy seem happy in their new home. They say they'll live out their retirement years here. They're hunkered down and prepared to weather whatever the future has in store. From Detroit, this is Desiree Cooper for Weekend America.
You can go to Palmer Woods to see Connie and Romy in their new home. That's at weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week.
Man, I'm going to miss Rod Blagojevich. For the past month or so, we've always had one good, weird, funny topic to count on for good news, bad news, no news. Blago plus smaller Girl Scout cookies. Next on Weekend America. Thank you. From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. A lot of things happen over the course of the week. It's hard to follow all the news that's going on. We are here to help, and we are here to sort it into handy categories of good news, bad news, or no news with the assistance of our panel. Comedian, writer, bon vivant, Dana Gould. Hey, Dana.
Hello.
Author Nancy French. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, John.
Associate editor at The Atlantic, Rehan Salam. Hello, Rehan.
Hello, sir.
First topic, quite a week for Rod Blagojevich. His impeachment trial took place in the Illinois State Legislature, but Blagojevich blew off the first part of that trial, choosing instead to go on Good Morning America, The View, other places to declare his innocence. Thursday, he shows up to give a long speech in his own defense and is then convicted on a unanimous vote and tossed from office. The week in Blagojevich, good news, bad news, or no news?
I think that it's good news that the rule of law is upheld, that Illinois is cleaning house, that justice is reigning, blah, blah, blah. But it is such bad news for the priceless comedy that has entailed. I mean, it's so fascinating to watch this guy on TV. His obvious gift is bluffing. He's amazing because when you watch him, you feel like he believes he's innocent.
Speaking from Hollywood, California, the narcissistic personality disorder capital, we feel that he's one of us and we'd like him to get out here soon.
Oh.
It was great news for lovers of crazy people, and that's me.
You know, we always talk about Barack Obama as a tall, skinny kid with a funny name.
Right.
But Blagojevich spoke for corrupt, floppy-haired men with funny names. And so I think that, you know, in that regard, I think it's bad news because I think that, you know, one of our proudest representatives has now been felled by the jackals who call themselves the law.
All right, moving on. Like many companies and many government agencies, the United States Postal Service is hurting financially. They're thinking about ways to cut back on costs, and they're considering cutting back service to 5 days a week and ending mail delivery on either Tuesday or Saturday. What kind of news is that?
I love the Tuesday idea. That is great.
Why?
I mean, it's not as good as... Oh, because it's... Okay, here's how I think of it. I mean... Have you ever taken a weekday off? It's fantastic. You get to go to a matinee. You get to, you know, you get to shop and no one's around. You get to gallivant around wearing short pants and it's only 20 degrees outside. It is the best. You get to go totally bananas. Imagine if all of these postal carriers around America could, well, maybe that's not what would happen. Maybe a lot of them would get laid off. But, I mean, the hope is that, you know, they would just get to, you know, twirl their parasols and, you know, just wear straw boaters and just love their Tuesday. Oh, it would be great. Oh, man, Tuesday would be fun day.
That's terrible news for me because I've been insulating my attic with unopened value pack coupons.
You don't open those? Come on. It's like people still get mail in a box. You know, it's like receiving news of the demise of the last party line in some obscure place in Montana, you know, with their phone service. You know, it's like not something that seems like it's a big deal. I read that the companies that really are struggling with it are like online movie rentals because their business relies on quick delivery of these movies so that people don't actually go to the brick and mortar stores. But to me, it just seems irrelevant.
The Postal Service isn't flawless by any means. It's gotten better over time, but it is one of those, you know, jobs, so-called, you know, bureaucrat jobs, that actually has a lot of value, and it's one of these things that knits the country together. One of my favorite movies of all time is Kevin Costner's The Postman, about a post-apocalyptic postal carrier.
You say one of your favorite movies?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's okay. Like Dances with Wolves, but in a post-apocalyptic future involving the mail. And it's actually just incredibly moving, just the way that, you know, in this America that's been shattered, in this, you know, future time, it comes together through connecting people through this imagined community through the mail. And I've got to say, it just makes me almost want to cry. I think I'm going to huddle into a corner now and start weeping.
So they are keeping the shorts and pith helmet look alive.
It's bad news for pith helmet salesmen, I suppose.
The Postman has a special place in my heart because it was the last movie I went to knowing it was going to be bad. And my friends and I used to go, "This is going to really stink. Let's go." And that was a lot. And it was right around that time. I was like, guys, I just don't have time anymore.
I own it on VHS and on DVD. And
really?
I actually saw it within the last couple of weeks. Yeah.
But do you remember when the unofficial motto of the Postal Service was neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds?
Nice memorization.
Now the motto should be snow, icy sidewalks, the gloom of the economy, addresses written in anything but blue or black ink, and even intimidating barking dogs might delay our carriers from their otherwise hit-or-miss delivery system.
Final topic. Prices are staying the same this year for Girl Scout cookies, but the boxes are smaller, and so are some of the actual cookies. The Girl Scouts say costs of baking have soared, and so have transportation costs. So you can support the Girl Scouts and not feel quite so guilty about it. Then again, them girls is ripping you off. Girl Scout cookie cutbacks, good, bad, or no news?
I'd have to say it's no news that the cookies are getting smaller. Because that only affects those lemon cookies, which they might as well go ahead and get rid of altogether because they're like the abomination of Girl Scout cookies. It's like they're trying to fool you into eating fruit. But I think it's awful news that you get fewer tag-alongs in each box.
Good grief. Those cookies are so delicious. The thing is that, for me, the size matters less than to what extent and how easy is it to crush the cookies and snort them directly.
If it's the natural counterbalance to the supersizing of our food culture, I think it's great.
Yeah.
You don't need all that stuff.
I think that, you know, it's really the microwave that's the problem. There are these two economists who wrote this really fantastic paper about, you know, the source of obesity. And people say, oh, it's because we're less active. But frankly, you know, given the huge increase in calories and cookies and soda that we consume, we would have to be so active to get rid of this. We would have to be, you know, kind of pumping iron while running, you know, sort of in a decathlon simultaneously. I mean, it's crazy. And it's actually, it really is food like, you know, Hot Pockets. I mean, this is an abomination. You know, it's so easy to make. Whereas if you actually have to heat something up on a skillet, I mean, it deters you from actually eating. It's strange. I mean, I don't have a microwave at the moment, and I now weigh only 3 pounds and have to be wheeled around like a tiny chicken carcass. It's very sad.
If you're ever arrested, you could glide between the bars and escape to freedom.
Exactly.
You might be with those Girl Scout cookies. Well, I read that some of the produce at your grocery stores are getting smaller as people try to deliver products that the consumer wants, but with keeping it within the affordable range.
The economic recession has gotten to the point where people are actually seeing its effects. And that's when, you know, that's when we'll witness a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth because, you know, people, a $3 trillion bank bailout, it's like people can't wrap their head around it. But smaller cookies and no mail on Saturday are things that people can actually see and touch.
That's the news of the week. And that's what you'll just have to keep with you for the rest of your life. Panel, thanks.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
I will quote Richard Nixon. We don't have a good word for it in English. Au revoir. We'll see you again.
Nancy French is the author of A Red State of Mind. Comedian Dana Gould's credits include The Simpsons. He's got a special on Showtime coming up in March. Rehan Salam is associate editor at The Atlantic, co-author of Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream.
Weekend America is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This program is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, and KPCC Los Angeles.
A coconut cake, a habit of calling strangers, a telling taxi ride, and a movie theater with a strict policy. It's a love story, and it's ahead on Weekend America. Thank you. From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. It's Langston Hughes's birthday tomorrow. If you're in D.C., you can celebrate. There's a walking tour of some of the places Hughes lived and worked, or you can check out a poetry reading at the Busboys and Poets restaurant and bookstore. Hughes died in 1967, but he's making news still. Poetry Magazine this month features three previously unpublished Langston Hughes poems written in 1930. Langston Hughes biographer Arnold Rompersad says he was thrilled to find out about these newly discovered poems.
At Hughes's funeral, he said that the event was to conclude with a little jazz trio or so playing Duke Ellington's Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me. And when I read these poems, I felt that Hughes was speaking once again. It was like hearing from an old friend that you hadn't heard from in a very long time. Suddenly there he was speaking words I hadn't heard before that seemed almost uncannily appropriate to the world in which we are living. In 1930, Hughes had behind him two volumes of verse. 1930, of course, is also 1 year after 1929, and Hughes can see poverty all about him. His conscience is bothering him because he is drawing this money from his Park Avenue patron when people are starving on the streets. And all of his instincts that lead him towards socialist ideals are poured, I think, into these three poems. I suppose we should call this poem You and Your Whole Race because none of the poems bears a title. You and your whole race, look down upon the town in which you live and be ashamed. Look down upon white folks and upon yourselves and be ashamed that such supine poverty exists there, that such stupid ignorance breeds children there behind such humble shelters of despair, that you yourselves have not the sense to care nor the manhood to stand up and say, I dare you to come one step nearer, evil world, with your hands of greed seeking to touch my throat. I dare you to come one step nearer to me. When you can say that, you will be free. The poem engages shortcomings in both the black and the white world. Hughes loved black Americans, but he was also keenly aware that whole sections of the black community had no sense of how to move themselves forward. I mean, the black middle class, for example, he often attacked because they seemed insensitive to the problems that faced poor black people. They were poor imitations of white folk, and the white folk were oppressing them, by and large. It also speaks, I think, to white folks by emphasizing the extent to which the relationship between whites and blacks is an exploitative one, with whites holding power and keeping blacks in supine poverty, in stupid ignorance that breeds children and leads to what he calls humble shelters of despair. Instead of a home, you have a humble shelter of despair. Langston Hughes was certainly optimistic about America. You would think from some of his poems that he was not. But I think that Hughes had a lover's quarrel with America. He recognizes America as a dynamic place where reality must be recognized. And at this moment, 1930, the market having crashed with poverty sweeping the country, Americans must be challenged and America must change.
Arnold Rompersad is a Langston Hughes biographer. He wrote about these newly discovered poems for this month's Poetry Magazine. Special thanks to the Poetry Foundation.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. As I'm sure you've heard me say before, we are in the dead of winter here in St. Paul. I know I've mentioned it maybe once or a billion times. With chilly temperatures and the sky gray for weeks at a time, winter can be a tempting time to just hole up inside and not go anywhere on the weekends. For lots of people who live by themselves, that means hanging out at home alone. And our next story is a fictional take on what can happen when two people who are used to being alone in winter accidentally cross paths.
Happy Valentine's Day. Happy look at Trisket. Trisket.
Today's Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. You're my Valentine, right? You're my Valentine.
It gets to be a bit much with all the couples everywhere and candy out everywhere and cards and bears.
Flower.
But I have this tradition.
I'm going to make a cake.
I make a coconut cake, and then I go to a movie.
Where's my sugar?
It started like 7 years ago, okay. Last time I had a boyfriend on Valentine's Day.
Turn on the oven.
The first year it was actually a chocolate cake, because Chad liked chocolate cake, and he wanted to go see a movie. We went to see some stupid movie.
Eggs.
What was it?
Oh, no. Oh, do I have eggs? Yes.
Okay. The next year, I had just broken up with him on New Year's. So I still made a cake, but I made a coconut cake.
This is not for you.
Because that's my favorite.
You don't like cake, Trisket.
Nobody likes coconut cake. Chad hated coconut cake.
Get away, get away, go away. That is hot.
And I went to a movie that I chose.
Trisket is the cat. Who's that cat? Trisket is the... What is all over you? Oh, gross. What do you do all day? I'm coming, I'm coming. Hello?
Hello, I'm calling to speak with Elizabeth Kostek.
This is she?
Hi, Elizabeth. My name is Brian Privet.
Hello.
Hi, I am calling people I haven't met before on Valentine's Day to say hello.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Are you selling something?
No.
What is this?
It's just completely random. I picked your name out of a phone book, and I'm just calling to say hello. So, hello, I'm Brian.
There's something about talking to people I don't know that feels better than talking to people I do know on Valentine's Day. My friends, they've already heard it. They've heard it hundreds of times before that I'm alone. They don't need to hear it again.
Hello?
Hello, Pat? Pat Etchell?
Yeah?
Hi. My name is Brian Privet. And I guess it's a tradition now. This will be the third year that I call people on the telephone who I don't know just to reach out and connect with someone.
How did you get my number?
I just picked it at random.
From where?
Oh, just the telephone book.
Why are you calling?
Some people don't want to talk on the phone.
No, thanks.
Sometimes it makes me feel worse.
I'm sorry. I just don't have time to talk to someone who's weird right now.
I understand it, but it doesn't feel good. But you'd be surprised. A lot of times I'm surprised by how many people will chat. And it's nice. It's a nice surprise.
So I appreciate it when somebody will listen to me.
Oh.
So that's why I listen to people when they call and talk to me.
Oh, well, that's good. I've never seen any of these people. I don't know what they look like, and I've definitely never met any of them. I don't want that, and I don't try to take it to that. I always look in the phone book, and same thing here. I just opened up the page, and it happened to be on the K's.
Yeah.
So, here we go. Elizabeth Kostek. All right. Here we go, Elizabeth.
Okay. Well, hello, Brian. That was very weird and interesting of you. Have a good night.
If you'll only take a moment.
I'm sort of busy right now. I'm making a cake.
What kind of cake are you baking?
I'm making a coconut cake. So good luck with your thing.
I like that. I love coconut cakes. I had
now
one.
You're definitely a weirdo.
No. I had one for my birthday when I was 8.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ask for that or did your parents just do it?
I asked for it.
Really?
Definitely. I've always loved coconut on everything.
And I asked for it on my birthday, and not everybody ate it. It didn't get finished, and that was great because I got to eat it. What's the flavor on the inside?
It's just white cake.
Yeah, that's good.
I feel like it sets off the coconut taste the best.
It is. That is the best. It's the best for coconut cake. Some people try chocolate in coconut cake.
I always want that to be better than it actually is.
Yeah, because it's moist, but it just doesn't go together.
Yeah, they don't work right.
There's different kinds of creaminess.
Why am I talking to you?
Because it's nice to talk to someone, isn't it?
Is this how you pick people up?
No.
You do this, you call somebody, and then you're like, hey, come on, hey, come on.
It's not about that at all.
It's not about that at all.
No, I never meet the people face to face.
So you'll call people, but you won't meet them?
Never.
How do you know?
Oh, well, I didn't think of, maybe on accident I've met them. Hmm. It's possible, I guess.
So you could accidentally meet somebody, but you just don't do it on purpose.
Right.
Like, if I was going to go to the movies, you could accidentally go to the same movie?
Yeah, if we accidentally, a few years from now, went to the same movie theater and I...
But happened. What if later tonight I was going to go see The Princess Bride at the Biograph at 9:30?
No, I'm not trying to get a date out of this. This is just...
Why not? Are you scared? You sound scared.
I mean, I just called you on the phone. That would be weird if we met, wouldn't it?
That was just an offhand comment. You can do whatever you want. I just think it's weird that you call people and then are scared to actually meet them.
Well, okay. I think it's not that much stranger to ask somebody who you've just met on the telephone to come see a movie with you. You don't even know.
I didn't know that that's what I did.
That's not why I'm doing this. I'm going to make some other calls after this.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
But, you know, just so you know, 9:30.
Okay.
And I'm going to have a whole piece of coconut cake.
I hope you enjoy it.
Taxi! Thank you.
No problem.
I am going to Greenwood and 47th.
Okay. That's the theater, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Going to the movies?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are you going to see?
I'm seeing The Princess Bride.
That's an old movie, right?
Yeah, they're showing it again for Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah? Date?
No.
No?
No, I'm, maybe meeting a friend.
What do you mean?
Well, he might not be there. We've never met.
You never met the guy?
No, he just called me on the phone.
How did he get your phone number?
Out of the phone book.
He picked your name out of a phone book and called you?
Yeah.
And then you told him where you're gonna be?
Yeah.
That's bold.
I'm gonna be in public.
Is this how you date?
No. It's not a date.
How many boyfriends you had before?
It's none of your business.
Okay, fair enough. I've had a lot of girlfriends.
I'm sure you have.
Guess.
Guess?
Yeah.
I don't know. 20.
It's a good guess.
You've had 20 girlfriends?
Those are girlfriends. Those are serious relationships. I've had dalliances with hundreds of women.
Oh. And this all works out for you? You're telling me this is the way I should be living?
It's working for me.
Your way sounds lonely to me.
Really?
Yeah.
But at least I'm with somebody.
At least I'm with somebody?
Yeah.
That's a great life philosophy.
Well, what's your life philosophy?
I don't know. See what happens next.
Can I help you?
Hi, I'd like to get one for Princess Bride.
It'll be $11.50.
Here you go.
Pardon, Elizabeth Kostick?
Yes.
Brian.
Are you okay? Hi.
Hi.
You knew me because of the cake.
Yeah, I thought about that after we got off the phone. Like, how will she know? And I'm like, well, she'll have cake.
Yeah, I brought cake.
Yeah.
This is all very weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot different than talking on the phone.
You don't look like I thought you'd look.
Oh, clothes, hair.
Yeah, you have clothes and hair, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, you too. I didn't
expect you to be blonde.
I don't know if my voice is blonde.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
I don't know.
Well, we should go in.
Oh, yeah, right.
So what happened to not meeting people that you called?
Coconut cake and Princess Bride. How could I...
You broke your rule.
Well, it's going pretty well so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, there's no food in the theater, ma'am.
It's just a piece of cake.
Yeah, she made it.
You'll have to take it outside.
Okay.
All right.
I'm sorry. I didn't even think of that.
I mean, it's not like they sell cake. We're not going to buy.
You know what? I'm just going to throw out the cake and we can just go in.
No. You spend so much time making it and it looks great. It looks delicious.
Yeah, I sort of have this thing. I see a movie every Valentine's Day.
Well, maybe this will be a new tradition, getting kicked out of movie theaters for trying to bring in cake.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean,
we'll find a place where we can eat cake.
Okay.
All right.
The actors in that story were Eliza Skinner and Birch Harms, with Curtis Gwynn as the taxi driver. Jonathan Mitchell produced that piece. This weekend, Jonathan is moving in with his girlfriend, who he swears he didn't meet by randomly picking her name out of the phone book. Mild and mellow weather through much of the country this weekend, but a storm is coming in Sunday night, moving across Florida, through the Carolinas, up into the Northeast as the week begins. For more weather and fun for this weekend, though, here's Jeannie Yandel.
Lefse is a traditional Scandinavian bread, and Granite Falls, Minnesota shows Lefse makes for excellent throwing at the competitive Lefse Fling during Ole and Lena Fest. 34 and sunny, pretty balmy for sleigh rides, carnival, and a meet and greet with Ole and Lena themselves. Just keep an eye on the sky. Nobody likes being blindsided by flying Lefse. The illustrator Edward Gorey lived alone. He didn't travel and he didn't like parties, so he probably wouldn't enjoy Los Angeles's Edwardian Ball celebrating his artwork. Sunny and 74 degrees, too nice to be outside, so skulk around inside, smoking your clove cigarettes and composing your dark poems. On second thought, perhaps a crowd of antisocial Cure fans is exactly what Mr. Gorey would have liked. People with limitless time and patience can train a duck to run a race. Avoca, Nebraska's quack-off races are like the trained duck Olympics. Sunny and 44 to watch trained ducks compete or race your own trained duck. Don't have a trained duck? Rent one for $5. Winning ducks are given 5 minutes to flap around and quack and basically act like normal, untrained ducks. For more information on these and other events, go to weekendamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm Jeannie Yandel for Weekend America.
We've been doing this show for almost 5 years now, so what has it all meant? What has it all led to? That's a tough question, but I'll tell you what I think next on Weekend America.
American Public Media would like to thank Target for its generous support of Weekend America and the communities we have served together from the first show to the last.
From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. Gosh, I've enjoyed saying that. On some stations, this is the last hour you'll hear of Weekend America. When you reach the end of an experience, it is right to ask, what have I learned? And after 5 years of shows, fair question. What I've learned is patriotism. And patriotism used to make me uneasy. I remember when Reagan took office on the heels of the Iran hostage crisis and the national malaise, suddenly patriotism was in fashion. But it was all about symbols, bald eagles, flags rippling in the wind, terrible country music. I was 11, 12 years old at the time, and I didn't buy it. That wasn't pride. It was garish iconography. Whatever America was, it sure wasn't an eagle with a flag behind it and Lee Greenwood singing. Call me a commie if you want. That's been my default position ever since. And then I started working on this show. First as an occasional freelance reporter, and then I was asked to do the weekend weather segment, and I was reading up on all these incredibly diverse things that Americans did every weekend. I would usually find about 20, 25 events that were unique, funny, odd, amazing, and then Bill Radke and I would narrow that list down to six of our favorites. In Bristol, Rhode Island, 72, showers, 100% chance of Nordic conquest. No, ABBA isn't back together. It's a Viking weekend with reenactments, family activities, games, and if things go well, the pillaging and burning of all of Bristol. You know, there are Civil War reenactments all over the country. Would it be that hard to arrange the awesomest fake battle ever? Six of those every week for years. All these things happening in our country this weekend, I would think to myself. In our country, we have dolphin mating, watching boat trips, competitions to throw fish across state borders in Georgia, the standstill parade in Minnesota where the floats don't move and then the people walk around them to check them out more thoroughly. Later, I joined the show as a staff reporter and then a while back became the host. The more I was drawn into the show, the more America, the full, brilliant scope of it, opened up to me. Now, right here is when I would give you an example of one or two of the best stories on a week in America. That's impossible. There are too many. So how about this? Go to weekendamerica.org, pick a noun, any noun. How about dog? First result, a story about a dog race along Lake Superior named after the son of a Chippewa chief, John Bear Grease. And in the story, the dogs stumble across a moose. Then here's a story about someone who's made it their mission to track down former soldiers after buying some old dog tags in a flea market. Okay, let's try another noun. How about leg? Here's a story about a guy who was paralyzed and then built himself robot legs. Over here, there's a celebration of the final skate at a roller rink in Brooklyn, Rainbow Leg Warmers. And reporter Charlie Schroeder trying to master all the legs of the decathlon. He doesn't master the decathlon.
Not in the shot put.
Ow! Ow!
The high jump. Or the 400 meters.
Every one of those stories makes me love America more. But it's not just the quirky, happy, funny, noble ones. There's a Las Vegas gated community riddled with foreclosures.
We go inside, and a little boy, Mike's grandson, looks at me. The tape's a little quiet there, but the boy yells, "They're here to take away our house."
And there's been ugliness. A guy near Houston who doesn't want a mosque built next door, so he holds pig races as a deliberate insult to Muslims.
The pigs is a smelly, nasty mess, you know, and that was my first instinct to do that, you know. And they get worse, you know, with time, so. And the bigger they get, the more they stink. And I got more coming.
Then there's also Des Cooper's dad, who lived with so much racial prejudice in his life, talking about what it meant to take his family across the American South in the 60s.
Driving is moving in a sense of comfort, security, and carefreeness. I mean, you're in this car and you're just going, there ain't nothing else. If you leave early in the morning at the break of dawn, that's the best time. Everything is sleeping and just beginning to wake up. You see a car here and you see a light over here, but there's a sense of peace and tranquility over the whole city.
If you listen to Week in America, you have heard triumph and disappointment. You have heard joy and sorrow and humor and fear and beauty, and you have heard people. We sit here each week and listen to these stories ourselves, and for a couple of hours each week, we can all sample some of what America is doing on the weekend, on those days when most people don't go to work and have time to choose what they want to do and what defines them. We've listened to farmers dealing with flooded dairies in Washington State, middle-aged people going to cheerleader tryouts in Florida, people walking all night in New York to remember loved ones lost to suicide. A guy in Chicago letting people believe that he's Bono for reasons that he didn't quite understand himself. Montanans launching dummies off snow-covered hills because that seemed like awesome fun. This is our country, these people, these struggles, these ideas and stories. There is so much more to America than you could ever find on your own. And that's why you have turned to us. Next weekend, we won't be here. America will be. The weekend will be. And having listened to this show, you have learned more about your home, America. Your life is richer because of it. That is our farewell gift to you. Weekend America has had three brilliant hosts before me, Bill Radke, Barbara Bogave, and Desiree Cooper. I thank them for their guidance. They have been inspirations. The people who brought you today's show included Ben Adair, Larissa Anderson, Sasha Aslanian, Julia Barton, Rob Byers, Chrissy Clark, Desiree Cooper, Hillary Frank, Ocean Kalin, Sam Keenan, Angela Kim, Ariel Kitch, Brendan Noonan, Michael May, Michael Raphael, Mark Sanchez, and Chris Wieg. Other people who produced the show along the way, Amanda Aronchik, Philip Babich, David Banks, Josh Berman, Tim Bamba, David Brown, Alex Cohen, Sean Cole, Johnny Vince Evans, Karen Fritchie, Jim Gates, Chris Hegel, Ann Hepperman, Neely Allel, Millie Jefferson, Susie Lechtenberg, Pat Loeb, Kelly McEvers, Delacy Michaelis, Kara Oler, Phyllis Owens, Tim Owens, Heidi Pickman, Tinku Ray, Phil Richards, Zach Rose, Catherine Scott, Lori Selleck, Jeremy Skeet, Ben Skirker, Philip Stearns, Rob Wood, and many, many others. Peter Clowney is the executive producer of Weekend America. Jim Russell created the show. The care that all these people put into this was done because these people thought you would enjoy hearing some good stories. Our website will live on indefinitely. We won't be making new shows, but thousands of stories are there. We'll speak again. Thank you. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
This program is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independence in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul. And made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by
American Public Media.